The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander. It is Wyatt Tomchek in for Kelly Bidlin today. Wyatt, good morning to you, man.
Good morning, Gil. How are you doing today?
I'm very well. Wyatt, for those who don't know, is the play-by-play voice of the Lady Rebels. Is that what we call them?
That's right. We just had our end of the year banquet last night.
Oh,
so I miss all the fun action in hockey and NBA. So
all right,
I'm ready for your recaps today.
Well, it's not even the recap. There's a trend I want to get to. We're not a trends show, but I want to get to something here in the NBA, which is just sort of amazing. I don't even know what to do with it, but I'm going to throw it out here momentarily. Kelly is not here because Kelly does like 25,000 shows on this network and podcast, but apparently it was the photo shoot yesterday that took him over the top, and so he needs the rest of the week
off.
How
did the photo shoot go?
It was great. It was awesome.
Who went on each other's shoulders for the photo?
Nobody did. There was none of that. It was fun, though. It was awkward and fun at the same time. It was super super awesome. We have a whole bunch of guests on the show. Drew Dinsick will join us to talk NFL draft and NBA with us. Sia Najad on the NFL draft and PGA. Mike Pritchard, our own, to talk National Football League. Will Hill in the hizzy. Talk baseball, his baseball plays today, anything else he's betting. Draft and beyond. Matt Brown, co-host of The Handle, stops in and from under a cloud of smoke. Jason Weingarten, full day of baseball. I think he gave us 8 picks when he was on last time. We'll see how many he's got today. Last night NHL, the contrast from last night to the previous night. Previous night, all games were one goal differences except for one that was a 2-goal difference. Last night, we had no 1-goal outcomes, just a 2-goal outcome, and everything else was a blowout. Really, all 4 were blowouts. All the dogs, all the road teams hit in the NHL. Rangers take down the Devils 5-1. The Lightning get a touchdown against the Maple Leafs. The Maple Leafs' quest for their first cup since 1967 starts very poorly, 7-3, but there were some injuries for the Leafs, Hedman and Chernak. We'll see about them. Jets crush the Golden Knights 5-1. Andy McNeil coming through with the Jets play there on the dog. I had the Jets in the first period, too. That should have gotten home, did not. Was scoreless somehow after the first. And then the Kraken get their first ever playoff win ever. They cash as a dog, a +175 dog, against the Lanch last night, 3-1. By the way, Andy McNeil, real quick, wanted to chime in because there's a quartet of games that take place tonight, but via text. For those looking for a couple angles on these, he said, I should have mentioned yesterday, he said, on some of the adjusted series prices, specifically with the Minnesota-Dallas series, he said, that's intriguing because on the one hand, I have Minnesota now up 1-0, it should be noted, winning 61% of the time in simulations now. On the other, arbitrarily, I don't think -140 adjusted price is a good bet, given that those are probably the same odds that Dallas has to even up the series at 1 apiece, follow Andy here. So I'd probably say, why bet the adjusted series price if you like the Wild when there's a +140 or thereabouts on game 2 money line that's out there? So he thinks it's probably going to be a long series anyway. So of all the choices, he does like, if you're going to bet something there, to bet the Wild if you have conviction on them, not to bet the series price, but to bet them in game 2 tonight. And then conversely, he does not think that the Islanders series price is necessarily a bad bet considering the price is around +310 now. Even though he doesn't think it's necessarily plus EV, but he thinks it's pretty much in line with what it ought to be. So the Islanders down to the Hurricanes, 1-0 in their best of 7 first-round series. He kind of likes, or doesn't hate, I should put it, he'll characterize it that way, the adjusted series price on the Islanders there. NBA last night, and here's where we want to get to this trend, but let me just start again. Last night, NBA, Celtics go up 2-0 on the Hawks. Hawks led it 22-11. Early in this game in the first quarter, you're like, okay, maybe this is a night. But the Celtics closed the first quarter on a 17-3 run, part of a 20-3 run. It was pretty much Katie bar the door after that. Celtics led by 12 at the half, by as many as 20 in the third quarter. Hawks could only get it within 8. DeJounte, 29 in defeat. Trey, 24 in defeat as well. Only 9 of 22 from the field for Trey Young, 2 of 8 from behind the arc. Hunter had an 18-12. But Tatum, 29-10-6. Derek White, 26 for the Celtics. Celtics shot 55.8% from the field. And here it is historically, if you went back in Celtics and Hawks team history, Celtics 41-1, went up 2-0 in a best-of-7 series. The Hawks, historically, 0-20. went down 2-0. Make of that what you will. Celtics 2-0 lead in that best of seven series, as most people surmised it would be. The Knicks and the Cavaliers. This was, of all the game twos yesterday, this was definitely the, well, one of two proverbial must-win situations for sure. The third game was as well. Cavaliers take the must-win and get it done. And they crush the Knicks 107-90. Darius Garland, 32 for the Cavs, 6 of 10 from behind the arc. Caris LeVert, 24, a 43-36 rebounding advantage for the Cavs. That was the key, because they got destroyed on the boards. It seemed like every time they needed one in game one, they couldn't come up with one. So that was big for them. Randall, 22, Brunson, 20 in defeat. Knicks only shot 36% for the field, 24% from behind the arc, only 7 for 29. Cleveland led by 20 at the half on the strength of a 34-17 second quarter. And then the other must game last night, Phoenix gets off the schneid. It looked like it could get ugly. Deep into the second quarter, it looked like the Clip Show was going to take this, and it was going to be bad news for the Suns being down 2-0 and heading back to L.A. But Booker ends up with 38, 25 of them in the second half, 9 assists. He scored or assisted on 28 of the Suns, 33 in the third quarter, 85% of their points. In other words, he was involved in the third quarter. Durant added 25. The big moment, the Suns on a 23-4 run. That was the big run in the game that turned a 57-48 deficit to a 71-61 lead. Clippers never got it to a one-possession game thereafter. Chris Paul, 13-game losing streak of games officiated by Scott Foster. For those who like the Scott Foster conspiracy, that gets snapped. Suns shot 58.8% from the field, 50 of 85, 72% from mid-range. And if you're wondering why I cite that, that is the best percentage from mid-range in the NBA postseason in the last 10 years. Kawhi, 31-8-7 in defeat. Westbrook, 28-5-5 in defeat. And there was a few betting moments, one in each of these games. Brogdon with the bank three at the end of the first quarter, crushing the Hawks' first quarter bettors. I think that ended up a push for many. Caris LeVert, a three at the end of the first quarter, giving the Cavs a first quarter lead by three. That crushed some of the Knicks bettors. And then Devin Booker, the three at the end of the half, the first half, that crushed Clippers first half money line better. So a lot of buzzer beating with 1 second left in the quarter or half shots that killed some bettors and were joyous for others. So here's the trend I want to talk about. So on this show, we don't really talk about trends that much. Once, twice, three times a year, there was that preseason trend, Dr. Bob's, after the first week of the preseason, teams coming off a loss versus teams coming off a win. Now, the teams coming off a loss were tremendous in week two, back when it was a four-game preseason. We scuttled that because now it's three-game preseasons and teams play their players in a different way, if you will. He also had a subset that was even, you know, more off the charts. That was one exception to the we don't talk about trends on this show kind of thing, because it was this sort of weird moment in the football calendar where we could exploit betting-wise. I also, for those who have listened to this show, A Numbers Game, the Beating the Book podcast, or Betting Dork before that, talked a lot about how the database in the NFL going back all the way to 1978, how 83% of regular season NFL games, if you could just pick the winner, a dog that covers, a dog that wins outright, I should say, or a favorite that covers, 83% of the time, the winners cover. So only, in other words, stated otherwise, only 17% of games do favorites win but not cover in the NFL regular season. And that steps up. We always brought it up during wild card week because that stepped up to about 89%, 90%, somewhere in there. And then they changed the NFL format a bit over the years, so we don't cite it quite as often. Well, here's one in the NBA that I want to give a hat tip to Cleve TA, our buddy Cleve TA on Twitter, who has been tracking this for a couple years now. And Jason Weingarten, who's on the show later, sort of let me know about this. But I then went in after hearing about this and dove into the numbers. Last NBA postseason and this one. So we're just talking about last year's playoffs, including the play-ins, and this year's playoffs thus far, including the play-ins. 91% of playoff games, the winners of 91% of playoff games also cover the spread for a ridiculous 101-10 record. We've played 111 playoff games, including play-ins, last year and this year, and 91% of the winners have also covered the spread. So in other words, only 9% of favorites have won but not covered. Last year, it was 83-9, the last bucking of that trend on May 9th. I believe that was game 4 of the Warriors-Grizzlies series, when the Warriors only won by three as 9.5-point favorites. After that, 28 straight favorites against the spread or dogs on the money line hit to end last year's postseason. This year thus far, after the first night, we went 1-1 on the play-in games the first night. I think the Lakers, when they won in overtime, they didn't cover as favorites. 17 in a row since. So again, during the regular season, it's probably around 80%. So it's more of a dramatic number when you look at it this way than it really, because 80% to 90% is not a negligible increase, but at the same time, it's probably not as dramatic as some people think. The question with all of this becomes, what do you make of it and what do you do with it? Because it's one thing to say, hey, just pick a winner, you'll be fine 9 out of 10 times. Easy peasy, right? No, obviously not. And I don't know why, to be honest with you, like if you're looking for me for something remarkably smart to say about this, I don't know. It's obviously there's not as big of spreads as rampantly. The large spreads aren't as in volume during the playoffs. Makes sense with the competition. But generally, I think it's probably the fact that with load management and teams doing all their shenanigans and chicanery during the regular season, we probably as betting markets don't have as good a sense of how good teams are and how bad other teams are. We just don't have as good of a read on teams in general heading into the postseason. But it's an amazing, nonetheless, it's such an amazing run that I thought I brought it to the attention. I thought I brought it to the show this morning, because 101 in 10 is just a sick, sick number. 91% again, winners of 91% of playoff games, also covering the spread last postseason and this postseason. Pick the winner? Well, you should be able to win 9 out of 10 bets. We'll see if this continues. Coming back with Drew Dinsick on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network. It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds, specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Skill Alexander, Wyatt Tomchek in for Kelly Bidlin on this Wednesday. Obviously, the other big news yesterday, Draymond Green suspended for stomping on Domantas Sabonis' chest. By the way, you're not old enough to know. Domantas had a father, Arvydas Sabonis.
My Wyatt. Roommate mentioned it to me. He's like, yeah, Sabonis had a dad in the NBA. I'm like, really?
He was one of the great passing centers, true centers of all time, made famous by Craig Kilborn, who you probably also don't know. He used to be on ESPN's Late Night Sports Center, the feel-good edition, as he used to call it. And every time he had an Arvydas highlight, he would say, he's not my Vetus, he's not your Vetus, he's our Vetus. Which was just endlessly hilarious to those of us who grew up in that.
I was getting a big Twitter argument yesterday about saying that Draymond shouldn't be suspended. It was Sabonis instigated the
whole
thing.
You said he shouldn't be?
It was a Warriors fan. He barely stopped. I'm like, he wound up and caved his chest in.
No one loves the Warriors as much as I do. But I came on here yesterday. I said, anybody who thinks he should not be suspended, come on. And the NBA did say this is based on his history. 2016, the Warriors were up on the Cavaliers 3-1. And people remember LeBron was on top of him, and then he swung and hit LeBron in the groin. That was my swing, by the way.
I thought you were going to mention the Falcon kick he gave Steven Adams the series.
The Falcon kick. Yeah. Well, the LeBron one got him suspended for game 5, which was a closeout game for the Warriors back in Oakland. They lose that by like 15, and famously, the Cavs end up winning in 7, which at the time was the first road team to win a Game 7 in the NBA Finals in, I'll get this right, 38 years since the 78 Washington Bullets, and they did so when the Warriors went scoreless. The 73-win Warriors went scoreless the last 440 of that game, and a lot of people to this day blame the Draymond, moment, and suspension for that loss. And so here we are, and we'll get to Drew Dinsick now, who joins us, kind enough to join us at Whale underscore Capper, obviously the host of both The Deep Dive and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. Drew, how you doing, man?
I'm incredibly well. I love the throwback to the 2016 playoffs. That was just maybe one of the high points of just NBA playoff entertainment in general. Don't know that we'll get a finals that good again in our lifetime. But yeah, Draymond Green, he's a Raptor that tests the fence. He is like you. He has no benefit of the doubt. I personally, in a complete vacuum, if that was a neutral player and a neutral player, I think Sabonis was more at fault for that. And I think there is a realistic expectation that the guy on top was trying not to put weight on him. He was trying to kind of use his other foot to get his, you know, weight over his body without really doing anything of significance. But with Draymond Green, you can't assume that. And so, yes, of course, he gets suspended, and he put the Warriors in a pretty horrific place. I still think this is a series is far, far, far from over. It's a market correctly, you know, correctly adjusting the Kings to favorites is fine, but there is sort of a divergence coming. And that is to say, if the Kings win either of these two games in San Francisco, game three or game four, then they should be like minus 500.
Yep.
If they lose both of these games and this series goes the distance, then, you know, then the Warriors ought to be favorites, because the further we go, the closer we get to a game seven, all of that unbelievable excitement and energy in Sacramento for the Kings in games one and game two,
yes,
that turns into a nervous energy that can bring a team down in a game seven. And you have a humongous disparity in terms of experience between these two teams. And, you know, the Warriors succeeding in that kind of an environment where the Kings kind of, you know, just in general, wearing a little fatigue from how fast they're playing, combined with, you know, just the general expectation of the crowd and the weight of the crowd, I think would be a tough thing for them to overcome. So longer the series goes, more it favors the Warriors. Kings get a win in game three or game four. I think they can wrap this up in five.
I agree with every bit of that, every single bit of that. Warriors 5.5-point favorites tomorrow night, game two of the three games tomorrow night back in San Francisco. So no play on that, I'm guessing, for you. You think that line is where it should be?
I think the market is giving you a little bit of a swing away at the Warriors here with Draymond out. The way that the Kings are currently playing basketball neutralizes a lot of the advantage that you have of Draymond Green being on the court, because, you know, his specific ability to kind of defend any position and kind of get the defense, you know, into correct spots is neutralized by the pace that the Kings are bringing to the table. So I don't know that really Draymond missing this game should have moved the market 2.5-3 points. And so, yeah, this is Warriors or pass for game three. And I'm going to play some Warriors first half, Warriors full game. Again, I expect this to go the distance, and the Warriors still probably win.
From your lips to God, as some might say. All right, let's talk about the three tonight. And it starts with a game that is, I think of you now, because obviously Ja, for those who missed, Ja Morant is a game-time decision. That's what they're calling it, game-time decision, after he said game two could be in jeopardy. Game-time decision for tonight's game two. Lakers up 1-0 against the Grizzlies, and they're one-point favorites here tonight. You have a lot invested in the Grizzlies. I might imagine you're not feeling great about this right now.
No, this stinks. I'm very disappointed in the way that this is turning out. And, you know, I don't have a significant opinion on the series price or the game two price from the side standpoint. I think it's fine to downgrade the Grizzlies in the absence of Ja Morant, one of the huge angles that I thought the Grizzlies had over the Lakers in, you know, game by game and series, you know, series in general, was their speed and in, you know, the mismatch that Ja Morant presented offensively against their defense. There really wasn't a key guy. You know, I thought that Ja on the floor forced the Lakers to decide who they wanted to be, either an offensive team that was going to get burned defensively or a team that was going to double down on defense and just hope that they made enough shots to win. Game one was extremely fortunate for them, and not beyond just the Ja Morant injury. You know, the shooting, the shooting acumen of Rui Hachimura off the bench really elevated a unit that has been subpar all season. And then Austin Reeves at the end of the game making those plays in his first ever kind of playoff experience was a surprise. So congratulations to the Lakers for getting the win and taking control of the series. I'm just crossing my fingers that the Grizzlies can find some adjustments and get back into it. They still have a pretty dynamic team. And in general, you know, if you put the ball back in the hands of, you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. and Desmond Bane in this one. Yeah, Desmond Bane's going to have a big night tonight, I would expect. You know, he is still a very dynamic offensive player. And in the games that John Morant was absent, he was able to be, you know, kind of an alpha on the floor for them offensively. So I think the, you know, Grizzlies still have a shot in this one. I make them small favorites in the absence of Ja. But I think the better bet on that game is under 226.5. That's been adjusted down, what, 1.5 off of game one. That's not enough for missing Ja Morant, in my opinion. I think the pace for the Memphis Grizzlies is going to be a little bit slower. I think some of the fluky shooting that the Lakers had in game one is going to be, you know, due for some regression. So under 226.5, I think, is the best play on the Lakers Grizz tonight.
All right, let's squeeze this in, because the second of the three tonight, also obviously, under the cloud of injury, Giannis is doubtful, full of doubt. Wyatt is a huge Bucks fan, or as we like to call it on this show, Galladay. He's listed as Galladay on this show, doubtful, which is the Kenny Galladay designation. So I don't know if he's playing or not. It's the Bucks minus 6.5. The Heat, obviously, who, for all intents and purposes, looked like they were done against the Bulls, and then just rally the 15-1 close of that game. The Giannis injury happens. They win game one. They're 6-point dogs here. What do you do with this, with the doubtful designation?
I play the Bucks first half, and I don't expect Giannis to go. I mean, doubtful in the playoffs, I think, means out. Questionable in the playoffs, I think, means in. Yeah, it's surprising because Giannis he's played through so many horrific injuries in these high leverage games, and for him to be out in this one is surprising. There was also buzz yesterday that, you know, they weren't especially concerned about this. So I don't have a good read on what's going on with him, what's going on with them. But I will say that, Miami is not a good shooting team, period. They shot well in game one. Now they lose Tyler Hero. I would expect that they are going to have a much more difficult time finding success from outside the arc. And I think Budenholzer's plan A in terms of an adjustment here is going to be, let's pack the paint. Let's make him beat us with the outside shot, because we don't think they can, because their shooters aren't very good. For those reasons, I think Bucks probably get the win tonight. I played first half minus 11 as sort of the strongest angle there. First half minus 3.
Minus 3. That's okay. Touch said something else there. Yeah, Kevin Harlan was driving us nuts first game, because he's like, oh, Giannis is so important. And then he was talking about how the Heat are shooting so well from 3. And he never connected the dots that those two things were related. We'll come back. More basketball thoughts and NFL draft thoughts from Drew, on the other side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's a lot to bet on in the next 30 days, and for a limited time, you can subscribe to VSiN for only $9.99. That gets you insight into daily baseball best bets, NBA and NHL playoffs, the Kentucky Derby, and the upcoming NFL draft. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays made by VSiN show hosts and guests, tools like our betting splits that let you see where the money and bets are moving every game, also a top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Sign up now for only $9.99. at VSiN.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. I put out this trend here in the first segment of the show. It's funny when there's always somebody on Twitter who's like, hey, I'm so disappointed. Did you listen to the segment? I don't even know. As I said, I have nothing to really make of this that's happening in the NBA, but I'll throw it out to Drew as well, because it's so ridiculously weighted in one direction that, again, what I said in the first segment was, I don't even know what to tell you about this. I don't know if it means that because NBA teams do so many weird things during the NBA season, and that the spreads are by nature in the playoffs not as wide many times, that this is a normal thing, because it's a normal thing in the NFL, right, when it increases from the regular season to wildcard weekend. But 101-10 was enough to get me to put it out there. And I'm curious, Drew, this is about 91% of winners last postseason and this postseason either win outright as dogs or cover the spread as favorites. Is the only actionable thing here, oh, if you like a dog, sprinkle some on the money line, maybe?
Okay, so this isn't surprising, and it's, I mean, especially the streaky nature of it, considering where we are in the playoffs. Games one and games two are very feel each other out in general. The handicapping a playoff series game by game, to, in my opinion, is a three-step process. Which of these teams is inclined to make adjustments in this game? Which, what adjustments are they going to make is step two, and will those adjustments work is step three. And so if you can kind of solve that problem for any given matchup, then you have maybe a way to kind of extract a little bit of value on betting sides in the NBA relative to market, because the market is always anchored to whatever the preflop, price between teams is, right? Which is player based, which is, you know, is informed by the regular season. It doesn't entirely reflect playoff rotations, blah, 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 blah. That said, if you don't have an advantage, if you don't have a player level model, if you don't really watch the NBA and you want skin in all of these games, flip a coin. If you land tails dog, take the money line. If you land heads favorite, lay the points. You're probably going to end up at worst case break even, because the margin in the playoffs is bigger than the regular season, right? The regular season has average, I think is like 7-ish points. It's skewed towards, close games, right? There's no key points in the NBA, but, you know, four or five, are kind of important just because of the nature of fouling at the end of games. I think you early in these series, especially, there is much, much, much less incentive to try to foul to get back into a game.
So that's also the point, right? The ends of the
game. Yeah, so margins are bigger.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, well, I think it's like 7 points or so for a regular season NBA going back to like 2000, 2002. In the playoffs so far this year, I feel like the margin's closer to 10, 10 and a half. So it's just, you know, the margins being bigger means the likelihood that you're going to fall right around the number is a little lower early in series. I would say that this year's data is skewed also because we've only had games one and two so far. Once you start incorporating 5, 6, 7, I don't know that this strategy is going to really, you know, cover you in flowers.
There is no strategy is the point, right? Yeah. Like, it's sort of like, is it a historical anomaly, right? Or is there something to it kind of thing?
No, I mean, it's streaky. It's going to be streaky all. And in general, like the playoff nature of playoff handicapping games, anyone who's really doing this well and does it for a long time, like, it's super streaky. You go hot and cold in the playoffs more so than in the regular season by an order of magnitude. And it's tough for me to really tell you why, other than if you have a good read on a team, coach, in terms of tendency breakers, adjustments being successful or not, then you can kind of unlock some series and get just, you know, bang, 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 bang. And otherwise, if you have some theses that prove to be incorrect, then you can just get washed.
Drew said, if you don't have an edge, just flip a coin. You're likely to break even. All right, real quick, just to be thorough, because I want to get your NFL draft thoughts. The third game tonight, Nuggets spread, you have nothing on that?
I passed on that one. I think 8.5 is fair, but I have a tough time with, and I think the total maybe still a little bit high. It's been adjusted down 2 points from 225.
We might have lost Drew right there. All right. Drew has nothing on the third game. Nuggets favored by 8.
It was so bad, he had to go.
We'll try to get Drew back because I want to get his thoughts on the NFL. But the Nuggets favored by 8, trying to go 2-0 in that series. They rolled the T-Wolves in a game that nobody in the nation saw because it was so late on Sunday night. Nuggets in that position as well tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific for game 3 of the 3 NBA games. Nuggets $9 on the adjusted series price after winning game number 1. The sweep will only get you plus 250. But the T-Wolves are kind of volatile. You have no idea what they're going to do. All right, let's talk NFL draft. We have Drew back. So every day there's a different report, Drew. And
oh, sure.
The last thing we heard was, well, Bryce Young has canceled all his team trips. And so everybody assumed from that, well, he must know that he's going number one. And then we had this, Mike Garofalo, I'm not sure how you pronounce that again, but he wrote this. He said, Panthers GM Scott Fitterer saying the team has gotten clarity through the scouting process since the combine, but has not made their decision on the number one pick yet. The board will be finalized in the coming days. Bryce Young still a prohibitive favorite to go number one, but did this at all signal to you that it might not be a done deal?
I haven't looked at the market in a while, but if, you know, if Young's not minus 2000, then it's not a done deal.
He's not minus 2000. You know, yeah.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, last year we had a pretty strong read that it was going to be Trayvon Walker at this time, with, you know, in terms of how much time was left in the draft, and Hutchinson and Walker were kind of starting to be co-favorites, and maybe Walker eventually got to be a small favorite. But, you know, from people who were in the room, it came down to the wire on the day of the draft. You had, you know, different opinions between coach, GM, and owner, and they all sat down and they hashed it out, and ultimately the GM got his way. My sense with the Panthers is that this is going to come down to coach, GM, and owner, and ultimately the owner is going to get his way. And from everything we've heard, the owner likes Bryce Young. And I think that's probably the right choice. So he thinks it's the right choice. That's the way it's going to go. I think this is a David Tepper decision. And I think, you know, if Fitterer and Reich sit down and say, hey, you know, here's the pros of some of the other prospects, we'd like you to consider them, I think you'll say, thank you, we're taking Bryce Young. And that, and then we move on. It doesn't surprise me that number one, the Panthers are still, you know, still in the process. And it really doesn't surprise me that people in the, you know, with NFL credentials are out there telling you that it's undecided, because the NFL, for some really, really, really silly reason, wants drama. When that number one pick and for the television show, like, I gotta tell you, you think people aren't going to watch anyway? Like, it does not, no one's like, well, the draft starts at 5:00. I'm going to tune in at 5:30 because I already know who the number one pick is going to be. No, it is appointment television for everyone who cares about the NFL. Like, just give it up here with the, you know, with the pomp and circumstance, so, and secrecy and cloak and dagger.
So let me interrupt here, 'cause we only have 2 minutes left. I want to get to this. What if the draft were right now, what do you think happens at number two? Do you have any idea? Any?
I think that this is, again, very, very, very little information in this cycle. And I think that's because the markets have been so, poor liquidity wise that it really hasn't been a dollar incentive for anyone to leak or really, you know, share information. 'Cause it's like, I don't know, I'm, you know, not going to make any money on this. Who cares? That's my general read. And so Houston at two, there's been a lot of buzz about them taking a defensive player. My assumption is that that is coming from lots of other teams in the NFL who are fielding calls from Houston, who are shopping the two. Right. Yeah, of course. If you're a team like the Raiders and you get a call from Houston that you want to trade up to two, you're going to assume, oh, I guess they're not in the market for a quarterback. And then that information, you know, gets aggregated from three or four teams, and you're like, oh, Houston's thinking defense if they don't get a trade. Ultimately, I think they get very, very little, any kind of an offer for the two pick. I think the Cardinals get very little in an offer for the three pick. I think there are other teams in the top 10, at least three other, that are shopping to trade down. And all of this creates just a glut of opportunity to trade up. And that kind of suppresses any kind of, you know, trade value. So Houston's stuck taking a quarterback. I think Will Levis is their QB2 on their board, and that's ultimately who they pick.
Okay.
The fact that Indy likes Levis as well, according to a lot of reports, I think also helps kind of push them in that direction. So once the dust settles, I think they take Levis.
Okay. 10 seconds. What's your favorite bet that you have right now? Or what are you most sure of? Bets that are out there right now. First Levis, tight end, first offensive lineman. What is it?
If Levis goes past pick 7, I'm going to have a miserable night.
That's what he's most sure of. If Levis goes past 7, Drew is going to have a miserable night. Thank you, Drew. Appreciate it, man.
Hey, best luck, guys.
See if we can't get Drew on a Beating the Book NFL Draft podcast, as is tradition as well, coming up. See you, Najad, on the PGA and NFL on the other side.
Enough.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Call your shot every Wednesday at BetMGM, official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. Place a $25 home run prop wager on any game, and you'll receive a $10 bonus bet. Simply log into your account and opt in, or download the app and sign up with BetMGM and swing for the fences on MLB Call Your Shot Wednesdays. It's just one more reason why the King of Sportsbooks, the best place to bet on baseball. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Wyatt, I'm throwing you a curveball here. The tennis plays. I have two tennis plays this morning. Yesterday, it's been very choppy here on the clay. Here's the clay season so far for me. The first week of clay, awesome. The second week of clay in Monte Carlo, terrible. This week, one day good, one day bad. Clay's not been a fantastic thing, but today we have two plays. The Barrera pick from 2 days ago did cash. We missed both yesterday. Today it's two dogs. One is a very, very long dog. Nicholas Jarry is the play on the men's side, plus 185 on Nicholas Jarry. That should be starting, I think about 15 minutes from now, I believe. You know how it goes with tennis on some of these, that the times are subject to what matches before them. But Jarry is taking on Karen Khachanov. So Jarry on clay is at plus 185. That's a good price to play on him. And then taking a flyer on Julie Niemeyer, plus 432, Wyatt. Plus 432.
May the odds be in your favor today.
Against Elena Rybakina. This is not her surface, and Niemeyer is a feisty clay player. So Jarry at plus 185, Niemeyer at plus 432. We get tweets at Beating the Book real quick. See us standing by. Let's see here. This is from J.D. Emmons. Hey, J.D. He says, Want to see a real Gilly special? Bet the day after the draft last year, 70-1. You called every part but the Bryce Roll Tide part. Dude, you know how I feel? He's very kind. He says, you're very so damn good at your job. Thank you. The best TB radio podcast radio show I've ever listened to. Thanks for... Oh, he has a parlay. This is what this is about. The Warriors to win the title last year. He's got Swiatek winning a tournament. He's got the Celtics winning the Eastern Conference last year, and then the Bryce Young one. So he's got Bryce Young to cash a big parlay cross sport. Very nicely done. This is from Nathan Mallinson. Any tennis fancies? Yes, just gave them out. Cleve T.A. chiming in on that trend we were talking about at the beginning of the show. Cleve T.A., who was really the one who's been tracking this. He says, I've been a broken record on this for two postseasons, but another 3-0 again last night with three faves covering. He says, I don't have the full database, so I'm sure someone can run the analysis on how often the pick the winner strategy has worked with similar set of regular season spreads. I do know it's definitely higher in the postseason. Yeah, and I think it's from 80% to 90%. And he says his only strategy would be, if you like the dog, sprinkle some on the money line, which we brought up as well. And Kevin Ryan, Gil, in almost every scenario when a player loses control like what Draymond did, the coach gets in his face and puts an end to it. In all my recollection, I cannot remember seeing Kerr trying to stop Green's insanity. You're right, Kevin. He just doesn't. He's just not willing to do it. He just doesn't want to make a problem even worse. And you're right. In some cases, you look at that and you're like, man, it shouldn't be this way. But that's, listen, they've won four championships. That's who brung him to the dance, and they're going to live with him here the rest of the way. They have no choice but to live with him. And it ain't a net positive right at this moment, that's for sure. Simple Life, I'm curious if it would be profitable to bet favorites on the spread and dogs on the money line in every game. Well, I mean, it has been, but that doesn't mean that it's going to be predictive. I think, again, if you like the dog, bet some on the money line. We'll just leave it at that as a strategy. Sia Najad joins us. Sia is kind enough to join us. He is the NFL and PGA analyst for Sportsline, co-host of the First Cut podcast as well. You can follow him on Twitter at Sia Najad, S-I-A-N-E-J-A-D. How you doing, Sia?
Gil, doing really well. It's a cool time of the year because we've got baseball, we've got the basketball playoffs, which you just alluded to, we've got golf, then we got the NFL draft around the corner too. So it's a really hot time of the season for me.
Real quick before we get to your Zurich Classic plays, because I know it's a squirrely week in terms of the format, your NFL draft thoughts right at this moment. What do you think you know?
Well, I'll tell you, I was on here a few weeks ago when Bryce Young was like, you know, plus 400 or plus 280 to be the first pick, and everybody was hammering CJ Stroud, and I mentioned that I thought Bryce Young was the better quarterback and that I thought those odds would adjust, and that's exactly what happened. So, I mean, I don't know if this is breaking news. I think we all have an expectation that Bryce Young is going to go first. You know, what's interesting is I know you have a bet on how many quarterbacks are going to be drafted in the first round, and certainly there's a lot of buzz about some of these guys that we thought maybe a couple months ago or a month ago could have fallen a little bit. And so I'm really curious, and I know Drew just alluded to Will Levis being, you know, a top seven pick or better. I just think all of that stuff is really interesting. So I don't know a ton. I'll say this, because you asked Drew a question that I thought was really interesting with that Houston pick. It wouldn't surprise me if Houston trades out of that pick and moves down a couple spots.
I think where I stand on it is that they're fielding offers. If they're wowed by one, they'll make the trade. If they're not, they'll sit there. And then the current buzz is that they'll take a defensive player. I just can't imagine them passing up on a quarterback. I can't, but we'll see. And that's why this draft, just, you know, a little more than a week before it happens, is about as cloudy as I can remember in recent times, because I really don't know what happens there, and everything follows thereafter.
I'll say this real quick. If you take a macro view of the quarterback situation and you just don't look at this draft, it's possible they're just not truly in love with any of the quarterbacks in this draft and therefore willing to trade down and then still grab a quarterback, but at, you know, investing a little less equity in that person.
Yeah, it's very possible. And they have the other pick coming up at 12, I believe. So yeah, very possible that could happen. Okay. Zurich Classic, explain for those who have not listened this week, explain the format and the bets that ensue from there.
Yeah, it's an unusual format, admittedly. So you basically have golfers pairing up. It's going to be the only event on the PGA Tour that is like this, where you have partners, essentially. And there's different formats each day. So the first day, let's use Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. They're the favorites. Let's use them as an example. They each get to play their own ball, and whoever gets the better score on every single hole, like somebody gets a birdie, somebody gets a par, they accept the birdie score. So on Thursday and Saturday, you basically have what's called four ball or best ball, and the scores are going to be outrageously good because whoever gets the better score in each tandem score is going to count. On Friday and Sunday, it's a rotation. It's alternate shots. So you're going to have Xander shoot one, and then wherever that ball lands, then you're going to have Patrick Cantlay shoot. So the scores are going to be slowed down a little bit there. But basically, it's 80 teams, which of course is 160 players. The top 33 and ties move on to Saturday and Sunday. And there is a huge block at the top that are the favorites. And then there's kind of everybody else. So in my opinion, there's really only four to five teams that truly can contend outside of just a random team just shooting the lights out for 4 days.
All right. So who did you land on then?
So in the outright market, I landed on, so I didn't want to take Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele because they're plus 300 and I'm just not interested in taking that number. So I took Morikawa and Max Homa as an outright at plus 900. I think that's fair. Max Homa's, his form coming into this is actually quite bad, but he's the type of guy, like when it comes to superstars, I know they can flip the switch at any given moment. So I think plus 900, I think they're appropriately the number two seed here. I think that's a pretty good number. Next down the line, Horschel and Burns. Speaking of guys who aren't playing well, Billy Horschel is not playing well, but this is the exact event for him. He's always good here. And honestly, I think he can flip a switch also. And because he has Burns, who's been red hot, I think that's a really good play, a really good pairing at 17-1. And then a long shot, Olesen and Højgaard, mostly Euro Tour guys, but they have a tremendous upside. So I like them quite a bit.
Okay. And then head-to-heads and first-round leaders. You're known for the first-round leaders, Sia. Maybe not in this format, but still.
Well, it's a good point, Gil. I actually hit Aaron Rye first-round leader last week at 110-1. So,
wow.
So there's that. Yeah, it's crazy, but I'll give you the first round leaders and the head to heads real quick. So I only have two head to heads. I didn't want to go like too crazy here. This is definitely a different type of format where you want to temper your money a little bit. So I have Olesen and Højgaard plus 100 over Hoagie and English. Hoagie and English not coming in with very good form at all. Siwoo Kim and Tom Kim minus 122 over Sahith Theegala and Justin Suh. Justin Suh being probably the weak link in that one, and Theegala a little overvalued because of recent form. First round leaders, I grabbed four here. One is truly a long shot, so take that for what it's worth. Schauffele and Cantlay at plus 1,000. I don't like them in the outright market because plus 300 is not a good number, but in the first round at plus 1,000, there's a little bit of value there. Sungjae Im, Keith Mitchell, 20-1. Denny McCarthy, Joel Damon at 35-1. And then the long shot is Scott Piercy and Ryan Palmer at 55-1. By the way, when this was an individual event, which was 6 years ago and before, both of these guys won this event. So they have good experience here.
What was your first round hit last week? Who'd you hit?
Aaron Rye at 110-1.
Dude. This is like a cottage.
For the record, I also had Victor Hovland, who he passed on Friday morning because it got delayed. So everybody was sitting on a Victor Hovland ticket, and then Aaron Rye passed. Unfortunately, we had that one as well.
Sia says he doesn't want to be known as the first round leader guy, but here we are. Real quick, one name answer. You bet anything PGA yet? No?
PGA Championship? Yes. I have not yet. No. Not yet.
Okay. Sia, great to see you. Thanks as always, man.
Thanks, appreciate it.
See you, Najat, everybody, with Santana Moss over his right shoulder, one of the all-time very goods. Always love to see that. Coming back, Mike Pritchard on the NFL draft. Did the Jalen Hurts signing impact Lamar in any way? That's next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.